Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got through the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Broken interception.
Touchdown, Giants.
And welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat. You can also chime in via social media. We want to remind you, Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Day two of voluntary mini camp today. It will wrap up tomorrow. Also, tomorrow is the NFL draft, so we'll get into draft speculation. Cole Wright of the NFL Network will be joining us shortly to delve into some of those topics. But Paul, let's review what happened at least on day one of minicamp, and a number of players did address the media. We'll hear from a few more today, including Eli Manning. Ben McAdoo also spoke. It was nice to see that the Giants back to full health as they get underway here in the offseason. Victor Cruz and Larry Donnell both spoke to the media. Cruz says he feels better than he's ever felt in the last 2 years, and Larry Donnell regrouping and recovering from that neck injury.
Yeah, the thing about Donnell is interesting because during the offseason there was a lot of speculation as to, well, where does he stand with this thing? And even if he's doing well, is he going to want to continue to play football? Because anytime you're talking about the neck, it is a very serious deal. He said he never had any doubts that he was going to be back on that field as soon as they told him it was going to be okay. They've cleared him. He's happy to be here. And as far as Victor Cruz, look, he says if they had a game this week, he'd be ready to play. And maybe that's true. I don't know. Maybe that's true. But he and Coach McAdoo also admitted they've still got time before the game schedule starts, and he will take the benefit of that time by trying to rehab that calf and get it as strong as he possibly can.
Well, they have to be smart, and they've got enough time to work him along slowly. Both of them did emphasize that. Victor also said that the knee is fine at this point. He feels he's fully recovered.
Two years now.
Correct. And the calf injury, obviously, you've had about a year to recover, so it's just a matter of getting back into the routine and holding up and showcasing that you could be durable. That's the biggest thing for him this season. And, you know, he did say that he's looking forward to lining up with Odell Beckham. It was interesting because Victor Cruz was also asked, Paul, about with the draft coming up, do you feel that you can be that reliable number two option opposite Beckham, or are you of the mindset that there's room for them to add some depth? Now, no player is going to back down and say
no,
they're not ready for the opportunity.
No.
So we weren't necessarily surprised with what Victor Cruz said, but, you know, he is viewing this upcoming season as also, I think, an opportunity to quiet the skeptics. There's that confidence that at least I took away from when he addressed the media yesterday.
He clearly believes he's going to be Victor Cruz again, and he is intent on making people see that.
Absolutely, and I don't blame him for having that mindset. As far as Odell Beckham is concerned, you know, he talked about working out in California over the course of this offseason and, you know, still looking to hone his craft. He's excited about working with his old former LSU wide receivers coach, and no discussion about Josh Norman, at least. He did avoid those questions. He's all focused right now on the Dallas Cowboys in that opener.
Looking forward to a great season. Stressed that he wants a Super Bowl championship and that that's more important than any individual stats, and he will do everything he can to be better so that the Giants can win a title. So comes in with the right attitude, saying all the right things. It's only April, but at this point, Odell Beckham has made a believer out of me.
Same thing can be said for JPP. Also looking forward to having an entire offseason program under his belt this year. Remember, he missed the offseason program because of the contractual issues last year. He said that he's already worked with the new glove. Another one is en route.
Yes.
Set to be delivered, so that's not going to be an issue with the club this coming season. And, you know, once again, it's all about a show-me type of year for JPP as opposed to talk.
He is promising a career year. Whether or not he's going to put up 17 sacks, which would be a career high for him, I don't know. But I don't think there's any question this guy is determined, much like Victor Cruz is, to show everybody that he's still that guy that we remember going to Hawaii in the Pro Bowl.
So across the board, obviously the team already in off-season mode, getting settled in for the start of the regular season as they are continuing to work out during voluntary minicamp. And one last thing we should point out, Paul, while it is voluntary, the Giants have a very good track record, specifically this season, of pretty much 100% attendance at something like this.
They really do. I mean, it goes back to, of course, Coach Coughlin, who was here for so many years. And you look, it is voluntary. I get that. There are labor laws involved in the CBA that make it voluntary. But you kind of know, you have that feeling deep down inside that it's my responsibility to be here. And when you look at your head coach and you look him in the eye and you say, I don't think I'm going to be at the voluntary mini camp, you kind of know he's not real happy about it. You know, and I'm sure that Coach McAdoo, while he hasn't necessarily glared at anybody for that, I think everybody knows, hey, it's his first go-round as a head coach. They want to be here for him.
Absolutely. And it's important to set the tone and build chemistry, which a lot of the players emphasize. And in comparison, and Ndamukong Suh was a no-show at Dolphins camp, and supposedly there's a lot of rumors that that has ruffled some feathers. So no. You never want that situation to play out early in the offseason. Well, we certainly appreciate those of you tuning in on Twitter. We are going to bid you goodbye. You can head to Giants.com to watch the remainder of the program. Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino here with you on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets as we move forward. We are closing in on 24 hours away from the NFL draft. So there's going to get to a point where we won't have to worry about all the mock drafts out there, Paul. We're actually going to have a 10th overall pick to talk about come Friday. But there are a number of mock drafts that have come to the forefront over the last few hours, I should say, because, you know, these things are tweaked all the way leading up to the draft. And still, all of these mock drafts all across the board, when you look about who's projected to go to the Giants, we have an entire layout on our website, Giants.com. You can check that out. But, you know, I felt it was important on today's show just to show you how wide the disparity is in terms of who they have projected going to the Giants. You have just two experts right now that we have put together on Giants.com saying that the Giants, they think, are going to take Ronnie Stanley, the offensive tackle, out of Notre Dame. Everybody else, it's all around. On the offensive and the defensive side of the ball, you have Mel Kiper with Jack Conklin. You have Todd McShay with Darren Lee, the linebacker of Ohio State. Peter Schrager, Fox Sports, says Leonard Floyd, the linebacker out of Georgia, who has really skyrocketed on the boards. Chris Burke from SI says Vernon Hargraves, the cornerback out of Florida. Bucky Brooks, Kevin Dodd, the defensive end out of Clemson. And then Daniel Jeremiah from NFL Network, Ezekiel Elliott, the running back out of Ohio State. So, Paul, I mean, you look at all these projections. We're only a few hours away from the draft, and it's still widespread across the board.
Well, I think part of the problem is there's still some volatility in the top 10. There are folks who are animate that number three, the Chargers, are going to trade out. There are folks who think that the Browns are trading out at number eight. There are some who even think Dallas might even move at four. There are others who say, well, Tennessee is going to try to get into the top 10 for sure. There are some who even think the Niners might trade out. With all of this potential volatility in the top 10, you know what? It's understandable why people would be all over the map. I get it. Because you know that when teams trade up into the top 10, they're doing it for a certain guy. They're not doing it just because they want to be in the top 10 or they want to get a good player. They're doing it because they got a guy who they absolutely feel they got to have. Otherwise, they're not going to make that move.
Well, you mentioned Cleveland perhaps trading out of the eighth spot. The player tied in to him, to there, is Ezekiel Elliott, the running back out of Ohio State. Whether or not the Browns are interested in grabbing him or whether or not they want to listen to offers from teams willing to move up to eight to grab him, that's been the player tied into that eighth spot. San Diego could go in a variety of directions of their own. They could trade out of it. They could grab Laremy Tunsil. They need some offensive line help. They could go in the direction of Jalen Ramsey, too. So I think a lot of these teams within the top five, at least, before we worry about the bottom five, you could point in a million different directions.
Well, even Buckner is a possibility for the
Absolutely.
Chargers.
In terms of helping their pass rush.
So if you don't even know where the wild, because we all think one and two are quarterbacks. If you don't even know where the first wild card's going to go at three, it's pretty hard to start lining up the ducks. You know, I love how Jerry Reese says we put the guys in rows, you know, on the wall. Well, right now, the rows are all over the place because you may think the guy is a top 10 pick, but hey, let me say this. I thought going in, we knew who the top five guys were going to be. even if you didn't know what the order was, I thought we all pretty much knew the two quarterbacks were going to go in the top five. I thought we knew that Ramsey was going to be in the top five. I thought we knew that Tunsil was going to be in the top five. And I thought we knew that Jack was going to be in the top five until all this stuff started to come out about his knee being damaged and maybe he's going to fall. I thought those were your concrete top five, regardless of what teams were going to take them. But now I'm not so sure anymore. It's going crazy. The entire thing's going haywire.
This is what happens when you have a lot of wheeling and dealing leading up to the NFL draft. Well, speaking of the NFL draft, we now have a special guest on the line from the NFL Network. We are joined now by Cole Wright. Cole, appreciate the time. Lance Metal, Paul Dottino here with you on Big Blue Kickoff Live, Giants.com. How's everything?
Everything's well, gentlemen. How are you?
Cole, it's great to talk to you, not on the team cam, but actually on the cell phone for a change.
I know, right? You know, face-to-face, but not really.
Yeah, I got you. Hey, so I know you're probably heading out to Chicago. You basically spend your entire day swimming in this ocean of NFL minds and brilliance. I mean, come on. The minds and the NFL intelligence that walks around in those offices on an hourly basis, it's unfathomable to even think about. So give me your perspective, if you can, as to how much volatility you see in the top 10 with potential trades, either people trying to get up, people trying to get down. I mean, Lance and I were just talking before you came on. It's a lot harder today than it was even a month ago to guarantee the top five or top 10 guys that will go regardless of what team picks them.
No, absolutely. And you talk about, you know, all the brilliant minds that, you know, walk around the buildings there in Culver City. You know, it is unbelievable, and there's so much volatility when it comes to the top 10 picks. And I think after 1 and 2 and, you know, Wentz and Goff, I think it's going to be a crapshoot. You know, we know that Zeke Elliott's going to go top 5, but I think after that, you know, the waters are extremely murky. And I think that there's always going to be that monkey wrench that gets thrown in the top 10 that is going to throw everyone's draft strategy completely off track. And, you know, we've seen it once and we'll see it twice, and it won't be the last time that we'll see it. And I think there will be that last minute, that 11th hour that comes through.
Well, and Cole, speaking of that monkey wrench, I think if another trade takes place, we've already seen 3 technically in the top 10. I mean, that could really shake things up. And, you know, based on the rumors right now, San Diego could be a candidate. Even Cleveland at number 8 could pull off another trade. From what you've been hearing, from what you've been discussing over the last few days, if you had to take a guess or a venture of which team's most likely to possibly make another move in the top 10, who do you think that would be?
You know, I really can't even roll the dice and say, because, you know, there was everyone that said before that, you know, that Tennessee and L.A., they were going to make this move. And, you know, everyone was scratching their head thinking there's no way that's going to go down for that number 1 overall pick. And sure enough, you know, sure as Sunday, it came to fruition. And, you know, a lot of people saw it coming. I wasn't one of them. And, you know, it certainly changed a lot of draft strategies. And whatever, you know, one could be coming down the pipe next. You know, I'm no Nostradamus, so I certainly don't know. And, you know, I don't make the news. We just break the news. So,
well, Cole, let me ask you this: from all those guys, the personnel guys, the GMs that you have sitting in the offices, when they're in that room and you guys are all sitting there and talking, and you're talking about a guy like Miles Jack, for example, who now has this injury cloud hanging over him, and we all know that there's a lot of smoke that goes around this time of year. So many people think he's going to fall out of the top 5. Some people even think he could get to the Giants at number 10. When you talk to your guys there, how serious do they think this injury question is for this UCLA standout?
You know, it's crazy because a lot of, you know, the minds that I'm hearing from don't have a problem with it. You know, myself, on the other hand,
it looks like we may have lost Cole there in terms of the connection. We'll see if we can get him back on the phone lines, but perhaps some technical issues here. Lance Metal, Paul Dottino with you on Big Blue Kickoff Live, Giants.com, as we are looking ahead to the draft, talking about some of the speculation, some of the rumors that tend to always build up hours before the draft, and things will, I'm sure, continue to pick up as we get closer to the draft tomorrow night. In the meantime, we will try to get to some of your phone calls at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, you were alluding to, Paul, it is really a guessing game at this point, because you never know. All it takes is one team to do some wheeling and dealing. And it looks like we do have Cole back on the line. Cole, I know you were mentioning about what you heard about Miles Jack and the fact that there's so many various opinions around regarding his injury history.
You know, everything I heard was that, you know, there aren't many problems with that history. But like I was saying, like, you know, I'm no GM, but if I was, I would have a problem, you know, going with a guy that has just is injured his knee so significantly, entering his career with such a blowout injury. Now, you know, I've never had an injury like that. You know, I've never been in a situation where, you know, I had the good fortune to be a first-round draft pick such as Miles Jack. But, you know, it's tough to overcome big-time injuries like that. And, you know, we'll see. Is it something that he can overcome? You know, who knows? You know, only time will tell.
There was a report called this morning by Pro Football Talk that apparently one guy from one of the teams, I don't know if it was a coach or a GM, had suggested possibly that Jalen Smith from Notre Dame could be a late first-round pick, despite the fact that he's got such serious nerve damage in his knee and it's lingering all the way down to his foot. Look, I'll tell you something, Cole. The guys I've talked to around the league said to me, there's no way he gets drafted higher than the fourth round. What kind of talk do you hear about him?
You know, once again, you know, that's the thing I'd have. You know, how can you, as a front office, and, you know, essentially a big-time, a Fortune 500 business, invest all of this stock into a guy that is, you know, as tough as it is to say, damaged goods?
Yeah.
You know, would you want to hire an accountant who you know has had, you know, certain inefficiencies and, you know, his 1040 EZs over the last 10 years? Like, I don't think so. You know, if you want that guy to start your accounting firm, you know, not in a perfect world. So, you know, it's tough to take a gamble on a guy who's been injured like that in the first round, who once was a first-round talent. So, you know, we'll see. And once again, that could be the monkey wrench. Who knows?
Well, Cole, I know you spoke to a lot of experts over the last few weeks building up to the draft, and I believe one of the players that you recently spoke to was Jerry Rice about Laquon Treadwell,
yeah,
who is considered one of the top wide receivers out there, and the Giants, you can make an argument, could be looking for a wide receiver with their first-round pick. You know, what did Rice have to say on Treadwell, and is he by far the one wide receiver that you think has separated himself from the rest of this pack?
I mean, he's a big guy. What more can you say about a guy like that who goes out there and really uses his hands first to catch the football? You know, and when you get compliments, you know, from the greatest of all time, you know, a guy like Jerry Rice, you know, what more can you say? I mean, you know, everything that everyone's had to say so far about Treadwell has been positive, and I don't see any reason to negate that because, you know, this guy is, you know, he's a win-first player. You know, he's a team first guy with nothing but the best in his mind. And I think whatever team he goes to, they're really going to get a big splash kind of impact player.
Cole Wright from NFL HQ on NFL Network joining us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Got a couple of more minutes before he's got to get on a plane. Cole, let me ask you this. Do you get a sense of that one guy, and let's put Jack and Smith to the side for a minute. We've already talked about their injury questions. Do you get a sense from the room that there is a guy who might suddenly get that cement block tied to his feet and just drop out of the top 10, and everyone's going to be like, oh, my God, because it happens every year. You know it does. Who do you think that guy might be?
You know, I think it's Laremy Tunsil. You know, a guy who once was projected as number one to Tennessee. You know, now it seems like, you know, he's slipping down the board maybe to Baltimore. And I think if there's, you know, certain players available, I think, you know, he could be, you know, the odd man out. I could see him, you know, going a little further down the board. You know, maybe, you know, it just depends on where the needs are when he's still on the board. You know, he like I said, you know, a guy who was once a number one projection, you know, now is, you know, six or even further. So, you know, who knows?
Yeah, that would be quite a drop. I'm going to tell you now, Cole, if he gets down to 10, I'll run up with the card for the Giants.
Yeah. No, that'd be a good pick. Paulie D with the pick.
Yeah.
I like it.
No, he would not shy away from doing that, Cole, and I think you understand,
yeah,
based on interacting with him from that standpoint.
I hear that.
It's interesting that you did mention that Laremy Tunsil may fall, because from what I'm also hearing, Cole, the difference between maybe a Ronnie Stanley and a Laremy Tunsil is not as wide as everybody perhaps made it out to be in the early goings of the draft when they were, you know, projecting where the offensive linemen were going. Do you think this shakeup with the offensive line is a result of trades or perhaps teams just not necessarily putting a great deal of stock in that position anymore compared to maybe some of these other offensive skill positions?
Well, I think it could be a little bit of that, and it not being as impact of a draft as we've seen in years past. You know, there's the Stanley, the Tunsil argument. There's also the Jack Conklin debate. You know, can he be a guy who gets your team into the right position to win, you know, win a championship, so to speak. So, you know, I think once that talent trickles down and, you know, once some of those, you know, quote-unquote monkey wrenches are thrown, you know, I think, you know, certain players start to, become a little closer. The gap isn't as wide anymore as we've seen with the Paxton Lynch. You know, Paxton Lynch was a guy who they said, you know, wasn't even, you know, an early second rounder, and now people are saying he could be a top 10 projection. So,
well, and knows? That was going to be my but final
the
question.
The one thing I do know, Paul, I have to get my laptop out, take off my shoes. Good thing I'm wearing some nice comfy jogging pants because I don't take my belt off, but I'm actually in TSA right now. So, gentlemen, I will see you guys in Chicago.
Cole, we appreciate it very much.
Cole.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Absolutely, fellas.
Be good. All right. You got it.
Cole Wright from NFL Network joining us here.
Look
on
that,
his
right
way.
Right before he enters security. How about that, Dan?
On his way to Chicago to cover the NFL draft for NFL HQ. I love being on their show and enjoy doing my interviews with him. Although, again, they're on a team cam all the time. It's like we're max headroom. You know, he's in a box, I'm in a box,
yes.
And that's all there is to it. But here's the thing that surprised me about what he said. He thought that Tunsil could get all the way down to Baltimore? Wow. See, he's right. I mean, he was at one time the absolutely, positively unanimous number one pick in the draft until all of a sudden these quarterback-hungry teams traded up into 1 and 2. And yet, Tunsil suddenly isn't like the next best guy. He's all of a sudden down, 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 and he's starting to tumble down the stairs. I've watched this guy. He's a beast.
Well, that's why somebody's going to get a steal at the end of the day, Paul. If he continues to fall, somebody's not going to complain.
It's going to be like when the Jets got Leonard Williams last year.
Yeah.
And he got to 6, and there's no way he should have been there at 6.
So if he does go to Baltimore, and I'm looking at some of the projected mock drafts here, they have him at 6. You know, others also have him going up in the normal third spot, but let's say he doesn't go to 6. It could be a reason because here, one mock draft has DeForest Buckner now going to San Diego, which we just talked about. Ramsey going to the Cowboys. Jerry Jones spoke the other day. They're very high on him. Miles Jack going to Jacksonville, and then Tunsil potentially falling into that 6 spot. And then in this draft, they also have then Ronnie Stanley going right after him.
Wow.
A lot of things fluctuate.
And where does that's Daniel Jeremiah. Where's
Daniel
he got
Jeremiah.
Conklin going?
He has Conklin going 15th to Tennessee.
And
so
the
Tennessee
Giants taking who?
Offensive line. Giants taking Ezekiel Elliott, the running back.
Wow.
These four mock drafts, which I don't know if we included in this. I think we included two of them. We have Daniel Jeremiah, Bucky Brooks, Charles Davis, and Charlie Casserly from NFL.com. Ezekiel Elliott, Miles Jack, Jack Conklin, Leonard Floyd. Those are the four different players going to the Giants. I told you, it's all over the place. Hard to make much sense.
And again, top 10 pick. You're in the 10th spot. You're not in the 20th spot. You're not in the 25th spot. You're in the 10th spot. And you got four different opinions out of four experts. I mean.
And you have two defense and two offense, too, to further make it even. Welcome to mock draft land.
Do you really want to predict who it's going to be? I mean, come on. Look, here's what I know. Here's what I know. At 10, there are going to be at least a couple, if not 3, 4, 5, blue-chip players there. That I know. I don't know which position they're going to be anymore. I don't know who they're going to be. But I know that they're in position to take a really dynamic prospect. And I don't think any way Jerry Reese is trading out of it. I think he's going to use that pick to get a blue-chip guy on his roster.
I would be surprised if they trade out of it. I mean, unless somebody blows them away with an offer that's just too good to be true, and then you take the additional picks. As long as you feel, remember, that in the event you move down, you could still be in the mix to get one of the players on the top tier of your board, Paul. The deal could be great. The offer could be attractive. But if you move down so far, Paul, that you don't think then you're going to get somebody that's going to be an impact, I don't even know if it's worth making a move.
Well, here's the thing. If you believe, as I do, there are three plug-and-play offensive tackles, and you have to get one of them, I don't think you can afford to go down out of the top 10 because I don't think there's a lock that any one of those three are going to get down past the 10.
Because Stanley and Tunzel, you figure, go within the top 10, and then Conklin's the wild card. Does he go 15? Does he go 16? Does he go 12th or 13th? It's hard. I think there's really a flip of the coin,
you know,
type of scenario.
If you want a game-breaking wide receiver, well, guess what? I don't know that there are any in this draft. There are some people who think the Baylor kid may be. There are some people who will talk about Treadwell as a great prospect, but is he a game-breaker? No. He's not a speed demon. He's not a game-breaker. He's just going to be a very good player, you know? So if you're really, really after a receiver, yeah, you might want to trade down a few spots because there are plenty of second- and third-round receivers that you could get that are going to make your team. So I think where your needs are, and then when you match them up with what the strengths of the draft are and where the plug-and-play players are, determine whether or not you would even consider moving down.
Well, but I don't think the Giants are of the mindset, Paul, where they're just thinking position. They're thinking top tier on our board versus middle tier and so forth.
No question.
So if you start thinking, well, we're just in the business of getting a wide receiver, I think you limit yourself.
Well, you do. Some teams do that, though.
Of course.
They will
go
need more than best player available. The Giants are the other way. But here's where it does come into play. And I quote George Young. He always said, you draft into the depth of the draft or draft into the strength of the draft. You do have to somewhat allow that to enter your consideration. And if you know it's a heavy draft in defense, specifically in defensive line, and defensive tackles, and cornerbacks. If you know that, that does have to impact your thinking somewhat. Because when you come around again, for example, the Giants at 40, I'm telling you right now, I think the Giants can get an NFL caliber playable corner, and especially a slot guy, at pick number 40 if they want it. They might even be able to get one at 71, which is the third round that they have. There are guys who can do it.
There's a lot of depth at that position in particular. No disagreement there. Let's open up the phone lines here. A lot of people anxious to weigh in as we close in on the draft. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Menno. Thanks so much for spending part of your Wednesday with us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Abdul is in Minneapolis. Abdul, what's happening?
Hey, guys.
How we doing?
It's gonna be an exciting couple hours tomorrow. I'm looking forward to it. So there's a great show on NFL Network that goes back and look at past drafts.
Love
and
it.
How they shake out.
Love it.
You know, and it's
path
kind of
to the draft.
How it's kind of a crapshoot. Pardon my French. I hope it's not too bad of a word.
That's fine.
Because you know, like a player like Leonard Floyd, right? If you look at his production, it doesn't equal up to where people want him picked. The guy had 2.5 sacks. Wasn't a game breaker, wasn't a huge stopper in defense, but he had a great workout. He has all, you know, he has the height, the weight, the speed, and people fall in love with him. But if you look at his tape, it doesn't measure up where people want him to go, you know. And a person like Treadwell, who's had great games, great tape, great whatever, happens to run a slower than average 40, and suddenly he's not worth a top 10 pick. And looking at the show, you see how many people fall in love with workouts, how they fall in love with their own age, scout speak. The scouts get together and they try to outsmart each other. They kind of get in this competition because they try to pick, you know, these diamonds in the rough or whatever. And they stop looking at the tape and they stop looking at how the guy actually plays on the field. And you get players who get drafted and players who don't get, you know, and players who fall down who should have been higher just because of certain, you know, measurables that don't.
No question, and that does also work and vice versa, and that's why I always love that phrase, believe what you see.
Right.
I think that's what you have to go by, and the Giants have always believed that when you go through your scouts' reports, you will basically put almost all your stock in those reports. Remember, this is old school Giants now. I can't specifically tell you what Jerry Reese and Mark Ross are doing, but I will tell you for a fact, the way the Giants ran their old school draft board and their draft room was that they would never, okay, they would never move a guy more than a half a grade up based on his workouts at his pro day or at his combine. Okay? Never. Okay? It was like, and even if they moved him half a grade, it was rare. Because they believed that you have to believe what you see and you have to trust your eyes when the guy was in live competition on the field. So, I hear what you're saying, but that's not the case with the Giants. The Giants don't subscribe to the BS theory.
Part of Leonard Floyd. I really, anyone else, I really hope that we don't get Leonard Floyd. Like the one player that kind of, I look at the running back from USC that was picked second back in the day. I'm forgetting his name.
Reggie Bush, you're talking about?
Reggie Bush. Yeah. He was the one player that looked incredible. You thought he was the next, Barry Sanders, and his film didn't add up to his career. That's the one player that jumps out at me, saying that the way he played on college didn't translate to the NFL.
Well, there is
injuries too. I mean, that's the other thing. Yeah,
exactly.
That was hard to account for.
And truthfully, all right, and this is why it becomes so difficult and why it's not an exact science, because you could always believe what you see, but then you now have to project what was the level of competition he played at. This is why it's so hard with a lot of FCS players and 1AA players, because you now have to say, well, look. And I'll give you a great example. Ramses Barden played against such substandard competition. He looked like Jerry Rice when you watched his college tape. It was scary. He was that good. And it was like, okay, now you have to figure, well, he's coming up to the NFL. How's the speed going to work? How's the moves going to work? How's the fighting for the ball going to work?
Press coverage.
They're going to play different strategy. He's going to be running different routes than he was running in college, because all they ever did with him was run deep stuff and fade stuff. Well, that's not what's going to happen here. He's going to have to know other stuff too. And then when you get into that projection, that's where a lot of mistakes are made. But it's not an exact science. I wish it was. My goodness, if it was like mathematics, we'd all be superstars.
So why is Leonard Floyd going so high? Like, why is everyone talking about him as a legit top player?
No, you could go, Paul. I was just going to say, Abdul, I think it comes down to, and I've brought this up on this show previously, it's the athleticism. And if you go by, when the Giants took JPP, a lot of it was the upside of what the athleticism is going to bring to the table, and how if they get their hands on him through coaching, they can take him up a notch. So I think it's the same idea with Leonard Floyd. It's not so much the numbers, the stats. Because remember, JPP barely played much of football, Paul. Before he came into the NFL, barely played high school football. He was raw. But they liked the athleticism. They felt, I can't bring in another even purely honed, crafted type of college football player who has that much athleticism. You can't teach that. So I think that's the conversation, Abdul. A lot of people are enamored with his athleticism, and they feel,
and
with great coaching staffs, we can make wonders with this kid.
And the athleticism is part of the equation known as the skill set. Okay? That's part of the skill set. You'll often hear me talk about this on the show all the time. I love the guy's skill set. Reuben Randall had a tremendous skill set. He should have been as good as Akeem Nicks was in his prime. That's how good Reuben Randall could have been, because of his skill set. Now it's like, okay, why wasn't he? Well, a bunch of intangibles. Injuries, mental desire for it, intensity, fortitude, hard work. A lot of things come into play.
You can't measure that.
Right. And that's the thing. So with Floyd, he's right. This incredible athleticism, most people think he's the most athletic player in the draft. You look at his six. You look at his. I got you. Well, I think he had four and a half. But you look at 6'6". You look at that frame. You look at that wingspan. You look at his athleticism, again, his skill set. And what you say is, well, if you love him, what you're saying to me is that you think that skill set is unique. It is incredibly exciting, because our coaching staff can do so many great things with him that he will have a dramatic impact on our team. That's what you're saying if you draft Leonard Floyd. Now, that doesn't mean you have to like him. It doesn't mean I have to like him either. But the guy who does like him, that's what he's going to tell you. And he's got a right to feel that way, because the guy's skill set is unique, and it is very rare. I will not argue that one bit.
Okay. Listen, guys, I'm looking forward to this. I'll talk to you guys next week, and hopefully we're all happy with what happens.
Okay.
All right, Sounds good. Well, everyone being happy, that may be wishful thinking. I mean, I'm sure we're going to get somebody.
That's why they call it a draft. That,
correct, yes. Yeah, so, I mean, I like the optimism out of Abdul, but let's live in reality here, Abdul. Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Scott in Virginia. Scott, what's happening? Scott, are you there? Scott going once? Scott going twice? Scott, a man of very few words, apparently. How about Vic in Florida? Maybe Vic's a little bit more talkative. Vic, what's happening?
Hey, good afternoon, John and Paul.
Try again. Lance and Paul, you were close.
I am so frustrated about these mock drafts that you won't believe.
I hear you, Vic.
I just remember a few minutes ago when you mentioned about Ezekiel Elliott, and Paul started laughing. Now, examine our running core. We got Jennings. At best, he's average. We got Darqua, he's unproven. We got Williams, who couldn't carry a watermelon. We got
Vereen.
Who else?
Shane Vereen.
Vereen.
What do you think of
him? The only guy that I think that is any good. Why don't we take a chance at Ezekiel Elliott, and then we can worry about offensive line, defensive line, linebackers, and safety in the later round, in the rounds. Why can we do that?
Well, Vic, I think if you look at the way teams are building up their rosters and you look at some of the unknown commodities in the backfield that have had success as far back or as little back as last season, it's not so much whether or not you have a named commodity in the backfield, it's whether or not you're blocking up front with pass protection and run blocking is consistent. Take, for example, the Kansas City Chiefs, Vic. They lose Jamaal Charles. They used an assortment of different running backs who were unknown to the majority of NFL fans, and the Chiefs' running game did not really fall off. When Baltimore moved on from Ray Rice, they brought in Justin Forsett and had a few good seasons. So I think what the trend shows, Vic, there's a bigger priority in making sure that your house is in order up front in the trenches more so than you have a dazzling big name in the backfield. Because if you don't have the blocking, I don't care whether you have Jim Brown back there. He's not going to be able to find the holes and work his magic. You need to be strong up front before you worry about the personnel you have in the backfield. So that's why I would lean towards making sure your offensive line is on point before you start selling everybody about the skill set position.
Vic, I'm going to make this really, really simple for you. Do you remember Rodney Hampton?
Yes, of course.
Okay. Did you really think he was a talented player, dynamic player, tremendous amount of talent, one of the best running backs in the league, went to the Pro Bowl, right? What happened to Rodney Hampton in the last couple of years when he played for the Giants? 1996, and I'm going to give you numbers here because it doesn't sound like you want to deal with opinions. I'm going to give you numbers. In 96, Rodney Hampton ran for 827 yards and 3.3 yards per carry and one touchdown. And do you know why? Yes, he was slowing down a bit. The injuries had kind of caught up to him, but because his offensive line was not very good. Rodney Hampton wasn't suddenly virtually useless. The problem was his offensive line was really, really, really below average. And suddenly a guy who was a, let's see, 5 consecutive 1,000-yard back was having trouble even gaining a first down. That's what he's trying to explain to you.
So what do you think these guys are going to do now that we have with the offensive line that we have? They're not going to do any better.
That's the point. You want to try to beef up the offensive line if you can. If a Tunsil or a Stanley or a Conklin are available at number 10, you draft one of those guys, and they can turn whatever guys you have in your locker room into much better running backs. That's what he's trying to explain to you.
Let me ask you one question, Paul.
Sure.
You remember Joe Morris?
Sure do.
Syracuse?
Yep. Love
Everybody
Joe.
Everybody thought that the Giants were crazy when they drafted him.
Yep.
And what happened? He ended up to be one of the best running back
ever had. Whoa. Vic, who was he running behind? That was a really good offensive line. The Suburbanites. Joe Morris will tell you his best friend in the world is Carl Nelson, who was playing right tackle. And they always used to run Joe to the right side, right behind Carl Nelson. He attached himself to his hip.
Vic, you also had a season, remember, when you had Brandon Jacobs, Ahmad Bradshaw, and Derek Ward. Why do you think all of them approach nearly 1,000 yards? Look at the offensive line. That's what I'm saying. You don't need a sexy household name in the backfield if you got everything in order on the O-line. And if you were to prioritize where the Giants want to bolster their needs, I would think there would be other priorities much higher up on the board than running back.
Well, then I think if Ron Stanley is gone, you might as well go with Conklin and get the, and play him right tackle. That's the way I look at it.
Vic, now you're singing my song. Thank you so much. Grazie.
Yeah, thank you very much, guys.
All right, Vic.
Love you.
Sounds good.
Love
appreciate the phone call. Look at that. Right. He started off with one mindset, and we had him singing a different tune by the end of the phone call.
We made it happen.
There you go. He took his medicine.
When the moon hits your eye like a bigger pizza pie, that's a morning.
Yes.
That's a Conklin.
Yes. Well, who knows? You never know what you're going to get out of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Point in case in point here. Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Len in Columbia, Maryland. Len, what's happening? Hopefully you don't get Paul to sing.
No, that was pretty good. Actually, now I think I'm going to go get some pizza for lunch.
That there
good.
You go.
Love it.
Well, listen, you know, can't wait for tomorrow night. It's just time. You know, time to make a pick. You know, the one guy, to me, the one player who is most likely to slip one, two, three slots to us is indeed Elliott. And I just want to say one thing about Elliott, Paul, and take another point of view that you have. Maybe a guy like Elliott makes the right side of our offensive line look better. Maybe by midseason we say to ourselves, with a guy as talented as Elliott, you know, Newhouse and John Jerry really weren't as bad as we thought they were back in February, March, and April. I don't know. It's just a thought, Paul. But for me, if Elliott is there at 10, he slides to one, two, or three picks, and I think he's the one the most likely to do that. I think I'd pick Elliott. Now, then I'm going to get off the phone real quickly. I just want to say this. Here's my philosophy. The Giants have got to come out of this first round solving one of the two major problems that they have on their roster, not necessarily in this order, wide receiver or offensive tackle. They have to come out of this first round solving one of those two problems. Maybe it's Conklin. Maybe it's Treadwell. I'm a Treadwell fan, and so I'm not saying what I'm saying simply because I'm a Treadwell fan, but I think they've got to solve one of those two problems in the first round,
Len,
and then go from there.
Len, they could get a guy like Carew or Boyd in the second round, maybe even the third round. There are plenty of starting caliber wide receivers in the second and third round of this draft. Do not panic if you don't get one right away, because they will find them. They're good. There's a bunch of quality number two receivers in this draft, and that's what the Giants need. It's okay.
Well, then let's go back to the guy that you just mentioned as your starter to sing your song, and that's Conklin. Solve that problem. The offensive tackle problem. We have to come out of the first round, Paul, solving
one of
those two deficiencies.
Len, I don't think you could go in with that mindset, because what happens if a dynamic pass rusher falls to you at number 10? If he's the best player available, then you say, well, do I need to address what you're arguing, which is an area of need, or do I take the best player on the board?
Well, this runs counter to the way you guys think and the way you think that the Giants think. At that point, I'm going best player at that position. My belief is we've got to come out of that first round solving one of those two problems that we've got.
The reason I'm on board with you, and it's a little bit different angle on this, Len, is that I do think Conklin has pick 10 value. I think he is potentially the best player on the board at 10 anyway, and he just so happens that I believe he fits a very, very big need for the Giants.
So for me,
it's a match. It's a match. I mean, I don't think it's reached to take Conklin at 10.
No, neither do I. I'm just saying, though, what happens if a great pass rusher is a little bit higher up on your board? That's all.
Who is that pass rusher, Lance? I mean, you keep saying – if the pass rusher is
if you believe that Miles Jack is okay, if for some reason I saw the other day NFL Network had Bosa falling that far,
if he falls there now,
you got to think about that. If Buckner should fall that far, if Lawson is there,
yeah.
There are, Lynn, there are guys there you'd have to think about. You can't dismiss them.
I wouldn't dismiss Bosa outright.
You can't.
I wouldn't dismiss Tunsil outright. But let me just say this. You know, there's something going on with those two players. If they drop to us at 10, I mean, we can't go from February till the night before the draft thinking these guys are
top five guys,
and then suddenly they're sitting there at 10.
Len, and that's why there's a lot of smoke going on, too. Look, I got to run. Okay. I got to go interview players. Lance is going to take you from here. Guys, we'll see you tomorrow.
All right, Paul. Okay. Yeah, Len, I understand what you're talking about, and I brought up that point the other day, but I think you need to look at it if there are a number of other trades that happened and there are teams that are trading up because they have bigger needs. I could see guys like Tunsil falling, and that's not necessarily a reflection of them not warranted being selected in the top five or six. It's just a matter of a team has a bigger priority, a bigger need, and they don't think Tunsil could come in and fit that need.
Ah, okay. You know, I can see that. I can see that. Look, one other thing that Paul said, and I think this is right, and this is brings comfort to me, Lance. There's going to be a good player there. We're going to get a good player. Now, it may not be the guy that we want. It may not be Treadwell. I mean, I'm Treadwell or Conklin, the guy that I want. It may not be Elliott if Elliott's there. But, you know, the guy I want. It's going to be a good player. One quick thing on Rodney Hampton that Paul brought up. I always remember Dan Reeves saying, I've had bigger running backs. I've had faster running backs. But I've never had anybody as big and fast as Rodney Hampton. Well, he was a good one. A pleasure
absolutely.
To watch. Hey, Lance, enjoy the draft.
All right, Len, you too.
Thank you.
Appreciate the phone call. Bye-bye. Thanks so much for chiming in. And that just goes to show you that, you know, sometimes it's not all about the hype machine or the numbers you see in college. It's about what the scouting department says about a player. And you know, I was looking over the 2011 draft. One of the previous callers brought up the fact that they like to look back, and if you could go back and redo the draft, what would happen? And 2011 happened to be a very impressive draft class. And SI just wrote a nice article where they spoke to GMs, players about all the decision-making that went into that 2011 draft class, and that class involved a few quarterbacks that haven't necessarily panned out, whether it be Jake Locker or Blaine Gabbert. And I'm sure, you know, if you go back to the scouting reports, there were varying opinions across the board. You can make the argument it pays sometimes to grab a quarterback in the third or the fourth round as opposed to reaching for one in the first round, and I think you could say that about other positions too. You know, it's all about where your board is, what the rankings are, and whether or not it's worth reaching for that player. That's why when you have the mindset, we're going to take the best available talent as opposed to reaching for a need, that's by far the better philosophy, because at least you're maximizing the value of the pick as opposed to saying, well, we really have a big need, but at the end of the day, maybe we can fill this need in the second or the third round because the drop-off at that position is not necessarily as big as some other spots. So, you know, I think there's various views that you can put into it when you go through trying to think about who you want to select, but it's important to maximize the value of the pick as opposed to going in saying, we've got to address the offensive line in the first round or else we're in trouble. We want to remind you that Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy sports. Just pick your contest, pick your players. If you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. All right, we're going to continue to roll through some of your calls and get to some tweets before we wrap things up. We've got Chris in Virginia. Chris, what's happening?
Hey there, Lance. Great show.
Appreciate that, all the time.
Love hearing you guys debate Giants football. Just wanted to throw out there real quick. I definitely agree with Abdul. I think Leonard Floyd is talented, but I don't need a Barkevious Mingo 2.0, or for all you Giants fans out there, I don't need a Clint Sintem 2.0 with the number 10 pick. So I think I'd pass on that. And as far as I heard you guys talking about Jack Conklin, I know you got to go with the best player available. Makes sense. But if Conklin's there, you got to take him. I don't know about all you guys out there, but I do not need to see Marshall Newhouse for another year at right tackle. That was not pretty, watching him get bull rushed and spin moved every other play. I don't want to see that anymore.
Well, Chris, it's interesting you brought up Conklin, you know, and as Paul and I were going back and forth, I think Conklin, though, meets your criteria of best player available and the need. So I wouldn't necessarily have an issue with that, because I think you cross off two checks on the list there, as opposed to, you know, if you just threw out somebody who's projected to go in the second or the third round and you wanted to take them with a 10th overall pick. To me, Conklin, I think, meets your criteria of you're getting good value at the number 10 selection, and at the same time, you're bolstering an area that you probably are looking to improve upon this offseason. So I think, at least from the Giants' mindset, I don't know what their board looks like. I would think, though, at least this is my opinion, that that would take care of two areas by selecting a guy like Conklin in that spot.
Exactly. And one more quick question. I'll let you get to your other callers here. I know Paul was talking about a lot of starting caliber receivers in the second round. That sounds good to me. How many starting caliber corners do you think there are that we could possibly pick up in the third round? I know Paul said there were a couple.
Well, I think there's a number of corners overall, and appreciate your phone call. Let me grab out my draft book here. I didn't take that out with me to start the show, but I'll tell you some names that I think are available here in the third round that perhaps could be good value. I really like this cornerback group, and I think that if you're patient in this draft, you could walk away with some real quality playmakers. Let's see. Chris was asking about the third round. I mean, on my list here, I've got guys such as Cyrus Jones out of Alabama, who could potentially be a third rounder. I think you could get a player who I really like, Kavari Russell, in the fourth round out of Notre Dame. I think that would be good value. You know, these are all players that I think have the potential to be starting caliber cornerbacks. Those are two names in particular. You know, Jalen Mills out of LSU could very well go in the third round too. So there's three names right there that I think between the third and the fourth round, they could very much be in play and can be impactful players. Now, if you look at the Giants' needs, and I think you need to look at it from this standpoint too, you know, you're pretty much set with your two outside positions. The question is, you know, what are the Giants going to do with the slot position when they have to go with three defensive backs? While you can argue it would help to bring in another corner, let's not also overlook the fact that Bennett Jackson had been utilized in the slot during training camp last year. I think they can utilize him there during the course of this offseason. And on day one of minicamp, it's important to note Mikel Thompson was utilized in that slot position too. There's another safety. So while, you know, we tend to get caught up in, okay, there needs to be another third corner, and I'm not saying that's not a need, I still think there's potential that one of these safeties could get some reps out of the slot because of their versatility. So don't overlook that fact. We're not going to know more, though, until these guys actually get out there and practice and, you know, get a little bit physical. Right now it's still in the early stages, but Bennett Jackson and Mikel Thompson, I would not cross them off the list as options to man the slot. Jalen is in West Virginia. Jalen, what's happening? Jalen, if you could do me a favor, if you could turn down your computer and just listen through the phone, that would be ideal.
So that one of these safeties.
All right, Jalen, we'll put you on hold, and then we will bring you back on. Hopefully you'll get the message. In the meantime, Fernando is in the Bronx. Fernando, what's happening?
Hello, guys. How you doing?
Doing well, Fernando. How's things with you?
Everything's great, man. I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, glad to have you aboard.
I love the show. You guys keep me sane throughout the offseason. If it wasn't for you guys, I'd be going crazy.
Well, I'm glad that we at least fulfilled dual roles. That's good to hear. I don't know if Paul DeTino keeps you sane, but hey, we'll take your word for it.
I just want to talk about the fact that so many callers are calling in, and they're opposed of getting an offensive tackle because they're not considered an impact player. And for me, since when an offensive tackle is not considered an impact player? When Eli Manning's on his butt, is he going to be considered an impact player now? Or when Marshall Newhouse is starting again and he's on skates for the whole fourth quarter? Like, at what point are they considered an impact player?
Well, I think an impact player you're talking about coming out of the draft is a player that, you know, clearly is capable of being a starter, at least being in the mix as a starter, or at least at worst a rotational player who plays the majority of the downs. And number two, they're improving an area, and you see that immediately in year one. That's what I define as an impactful player, meaning they put their stamp on the team in year number one. It doesn't mean that they got to lead the team in tackles or they got to lead the team in pancakes. I'm not necessarily going as far as that, but if you were to review the season as a whole, when you look back at the 2016 campaign and you were to ask me, you know, give me five guys that made a true impact on the team, one of those guys could be in the mix, then that's an impactful player.
Yeah, and I think an offensive tackle on number 10 will be an impact player. They'll come in, they'll start right away, and they'll keep Eli straight. He's a, you know, the worst that can happen is we draft an offensive tackle. He'll start for us for a minimum of 5 years, and hopefully we don't lose him in free agency.
Well, not to cut you off, Fernando, I'll let you continue. You know, the one area that I always bring up in any conversation that I'm having, you know, the offensive line to me is a position that it's just not sexy. It's not fun to talk about because most of the guys, let's face it, from an NFL fan perspective, you don't know. You couldn't pick these guys out on the street. You consider them a group, but the offensive line is so important. When you look at quarterbacks over the last few years who certainly have not forgotten how to throw a football but have struggled as a result of not having enough time, there was a year where Joe Flacco fell off a little bit because the Ravens' offensive line struggled. Ryan Tannehill with the Dolphins. David Carr, you know, when he was the number one overall pick with the Texans, I mean, look at how he set the rookie record for most hits and most sacks that he took. Any quarterback who has upside, if you don't give them good protection, all of a sudden, you throw out the upside of that position out the window. That's why the offensive line is so important.
Absolutely. I just want callers to stop calling in and asking that they want an impact player as if an offensive tackle is not going to make an immediate impact, especially when you have a franchise quarterback, especially when you're struggling in the run game. I want to ask one more question, and I'll take it off the air.
Sure.
Devon Kennard, his first year, he was used. He was used a lot of it as in pass rushing situations, and that was under Perry Fuel. And this year, he wasn't really used as, like, rushing the passer that much. Do you think he's going to be utilized as rushing the passer because we don't have a lot of depth in pass rushes besides JPP and OV?
Well, I think that's a possibility. I mean, keep in mind, they brought in a number of guys in free agency, like an Olivier Vernon, who has a knack to get to the quarterback, too. And Double O, we're expecting, is going to be fully healthy. He'll be in the rotation, too, as somebody that they're looking to continue to improve and develop into a consistent pass rusher. So, you know, I don't want to say, Fernando, that he's going to be priority number one on their list. You're right. I mean, I remember that game in Tennessee and appreciate the phone call, Fernando, late in the season where, you know, that was Devon Kennard's coming out party. Got to the quarterback, had a couple of sacks, and then everybody said, oh, well, you know, maybe if they utilize him like this moving forward, you know, he can feed off of that. Here's the upside for Devon Kennard, and he spoke to the media not too long ago. This is the first time in his long career, and I'm taking into consideration high school and college, where he's actually going to be the same defensive scheme in back-to-back years. And something like that may be an easy fact that you just dismiss. Oh, let's not make a big deal about it. But, I mean, look back at his USC tenure. They change defensive coordinators pretty much every year. And he went from Perry Fuel to Spags. So his first 2 years in the league, all of a sudden he had to learn a new defensive scheme. I think the fact that, number one, he's healthy, he's slimmed down, he feels good, and he's now coming into this offseason. He already understands the scheme. He understands the overall concept. So now he's coming into this year where he knows this is where you get down and dirty into the details of the scheme. So if he's focusing on now the minuscule details, that's where you could start to experiment and say, you know, maybe we could bring Kennard up to the line. Maybe we could call his number of the pass rush. I would not overlook that because I think everything could potentially start to come together for him with the fact that he's healthy and this is actually the same scheme that he's in back-to-back years, which is uncharted territory for him because every time he'd come into a new season, especially going back to college, he'd always have to be worried about learning new jargon and the new language of the defensive scheme. So don't overlook that. I think that can really help Kennard, assuming, of course, that durability proves to show. Vito is on Long Island. Vito, what's happening?
How you doing, buddy?
Do well, Vito.
I hear people, the Giants, talking about Floyd, but I think Shaq Lawson, who is a bigger and a stronger and a better prospect than Floyd.
Well, Lawson, I think, has shown some consistency in terms of his numbers in the pass rush. So, I mean, you feel a little bit good about that compared to what Floyd brings to the table. You can walk away and say, hey, this is what Lawson did in his collegiate resume. This is what he did in his career. There's some consistency there. Floyd, I think it's more athleticism, more upside, more what you can do with Floyd as opposed to Lawson, maybe the safer of the two because you've seen him do it a little bit more on film in college. However, you know, there are some questions about Lawson compared to what Kevin Dodd, the guy played opposite him, brings to the table with respect to stopping the run and getting to the quarterback. I think we could sit here all day, who's the more complete player? But I would say when you look at Lawson's numbers in college, there's a little bit more substance there compared to what Floyd presented.
Absolutely. And also about the Jets, they're thinking about trading up to get this quarterback. I think it's ridiculous. They already have Bryce Petty. He's just as good. And this quarterback, he's going to have to learn the system. He won't be playing for 2 years.
Who are you talking about? The Jets? I lost you here.
The Jets.
What, you're hearing about them moving up potentially to select a quarterback?
To select that quarterback out of Memphis.
From Memphis, Paxton Lynch you're referring to.
That's correct.
Well, listen.
It's a wasted pick, and it might be a wasted two picks.
Well, let's put it this way. If the Jets move up and draft a quarterback and it's in front of the Giants, I don't think anybody with the Giants is having anything to complain about, because that would potentially be the third quarterback, and that means that somebody's going to fall to the Giants. So, Vito, I don't really think anybody would complain under those circumstances.
Well, yes, they would, because they'll be going up to, like, the 15th pick, and that's way past where the Giants are picking.
Well, it depends on, obviously, where they would move up. I mean, that wouldn't help the Giants' cause if they move up a little below the Giants. But let's say they make a blockbuster deal and they move higher up, which I'm saying I think is wishful thinking. Anybody that moves up, Vito, in the long run, that wants to take a position where you know the Giants are not going to go in that direction, that's a gift right there as far as the Giants are concerned. And they're not losing sleep over who the Jets are reaching for a quarterback. I'll tell you that, Vito. I guarantee you the one conversation that's not happening up in the Giants draft room is who the Jets are targeting at quarterback. I can guarantee you that. And appreciate the phone call, Vito. Thanks so much for chiming in. You don't necessarily hear about somebody weighing in on perhaps Jets rumors on Big Blue Kickoff Live, but they are not overly concerned about that. Before we wrap up the program, I know a number of you weighing in on Twitter, so let's take a glance at some of your tweets here before we wrap up the program. And obviously, a number of players, by the way, are going to be addressing the media shortly. We will have all of those videos up on Giants.com, so make sure you stay locked to that throughout the course of the day. As I peruse through some of these tweets, let's take a look at what everybody is talking about here. A lot of Giant success in the draft was guys that were already pro-ready. Beckham and Knicks thrown out. Will brings up this point at Spain_man_1991. It's a fair point, Will, but I'll say this. I mean, how do you really know that a player is pro-ready? You know, he could look like he's crisp. He could look like he's got everything that you ask for, and then all of a sudden, you know, injuries happen or some other things come into play that you have no control over. For example, you know, Jacksonville last year took Dante Fowler Jr. And hopefully his career will continue to pan out for his sake, but who could have predicted if you're Jacksonville that a top five pick was going to get hurt before you even got into the midst of training camp? So there's a lot of things that, you know, are out of your control. You just need to trust your scouting department. You need to trust your homework and take who you think is the best player available, regardless of whether or not, you know, he's pro-ready versus he's got a lot of upside, because there's so many curveballs that could be thrown your way that it's very difficult to tell. Dre Day 2014 at D_nice_for_life. This was the point that I was trying to make here. If you think an offensive tackle is not an impact player, you are crazy. Two exclamation points. We need a silverback type of offensive tackle or a clone of a Kareem McKenzie for right tackle. Well, it goes without saying the offensive line is extremely important. You can't overlook that position. And you wish that a lot of fans would understand that, because it's the one position that probably even when these guys retire, they still don't get enough credit or enough notoriety. And all you need to do is look at this group that slowly, little by little, started to retire. The Snees, the McKenzies, the O'Haras. I mean, how durable that group was. Once again, I think the numbers don't even necessarily do them justice in terms of when you look at what that group provided for the Giants and how well the running game panned out as a result. Let's take a look at some of these other tweets that are coming in. A lot of people weighing in on a variety of things that we were talking about. It's nice to see a lot of people believe that the offensive line is a big priority and that should be certainly a focus here. AJ Marshall at AJ Marshall 3. Tired of hearing about Leonard Floyd, Ezekiel Elliott, Laquon Treadwell debate. None of those three are people that necessarily appease me. Well, you know, once again, it's all about maximizing the value, and don't get caught up in college numbers or college stats. I think you need to look about whether or not there is enough athleticism that if they were plugged into the Giants system, they would be able to flourish. And I think there's evidence that you can make a case for all three of those guys, but you also need to connect it to need. And a guy like Leonard Floyd has athleticism, has upside, and, you know, he can help bolster pass rushing, because I think there's potential to move him down to the line. I think there's also potential to play him at the linebacker position as a guy that can run sideline to sideline, and that's somebody in this day and age that's not necessarily easy to get a hold of when you look at some of the prospects that come through the grapevine. So I think that covers a number of different tweets that we've thrown out here. Anything else that I didn't get to, I will try to address off the air, but we certainly appreciate all the tweets, all the phone calls over the last 60 minutes. Be sure to stay locked to Giants.com for the next few hours. We will have full draft coverage. We'll have interviews with players as well as Ben McAdoo posted on the website momentarily. And Big Blue Kickoff Live will be up and running the next 2 days in terms of getting it ready for the draft tomorrow and then Friday to recap the pick. Jeff Fiegels will be joining me on Friday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We'll go over who the Giants take at number 10, and we'll certainly field your phone calls, so certainly stay tuned for that. Appreciate everybody for watching and tuning in, the calls, the tweets, over the course of the last 60 minutes here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. For Paul Dottino, who did stick through the majority of the program, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. We will speak to you tomorrow right here on Giants.com.
Come on, man, we need the work. Let's go, let's go.
Got through on the field. He's got through. 35, 30.